Now, let me see. Where were we when we were stopped last week?
The ship was swallowed up by the waves.
Right, yes. Mm-hmm. And the great cathedral bell was going down with it. Having just been born, having just found its tongue, it was now destined to be a dead doorbell, never to be rung, in the hallway of Davy Jones's locker.
What's Davy Jones's locker?
Well, that's where they say you go when you sink at sea, down to Davy Jones's locker.
What is it?
I don't know what it is. You know, maybe a condo or something? The ocean had swallowed the great bell's tongue, so its future was now forsaken. Still, I suppose, you know how the saying goes, when one voice is stilled, another awakens. For that, we go to one of the tiniest of voices in the tiniest of forms, that of a small baby mouse about to be born, deep in the recesses of the lair, where it's always round-the-clock midnight there. Mother Mouse was about to give birth. Expectant Father Mouse and Grandfather Mouse were straining to hear the same thing, the newborn ring. And there it is. Oh, I can't do Baby Mouse very well. Can you? Well, that's much better. But you have to keep eating. Your bus will be here. It's good.
Oops.
Oh, now.
I spilled the water.
That's all right. Use your napkin.
Sorry.
Yeah, you blot it up there. The effect of this tender sound, transmitting directly to their hearts, made their onyx eyes weep and their tear ducts spring a leak that trickled down their furry cheeks, and this is no absurdity. Many species are known to behave this way at the miracle of birth. Mother Mouse sighed a sigh of relief, then immediately began licking her newborn clean. "It is done," said Mama. "It's a son," said Papa. "Both wrong," said Grandfather. "Not done, only begun, and it is not just a son, it happens to be my grandson." A lump in his throat left him unable to speak. He could only emote, which he did by kneeling reverently at the young mother's side. Now, whereas Grandfather's heart was filled with pride, and Mother Mouse's was filled with loving contentment, Father Mouse's, though identical in kind, was also tinged with something like resentment.
What's reason?
Well, it means he didn't like it. For although he could hear his newborn baby's cries, fact was he had yet to see him with his own two eyes. He could not see his progeny, and this was proving to be something of an agony. How could he stand to wait until morning? But what was he to do? He was only a mouse. You may be inclined to agree that there was little a helpless mouse could do to throw light on their situation. Not strictly true, because, first of all, you see, mice are not dumb, and they learn the same way humans do, by observation and collective wisdom handed down. The problem is they don't go to school, and they don't live long enough. Not many beyond the age of 2, the oldest make it to 4, for a great storehouse of knowledge to be stored. Still, they can pretty much feel and experience wonderment, at least to the extent that humans can, and sometimes hatch plans. Father Mouse wanted so desperately to see his newborn baby boy that he thought of a plan. Many times he had observed the humans in robes using wax tapers to transfer flame from one candle to another. A candle on a high table was always kept burning out in the big chambered room, and the mouse's lair was littered with used-up stubs of these very same candles. The mice had gathered them and rolled them in intentionally to gnaw on during times of famine when their stomachs were raw and gnawing on them. Also in the lair, stored among the manger-scene props, were things like split rail fences, faggots of sticks, and bundles of straw. Father Mouse, pulling with his front teeth and pushing with his paws, withdrew a single strand from out of a bundle of straw, and holding it between his lips, the way you sip from a glass, or holding it the way an armored knight on horseback aims his lance, Father Mouse advanced through the maze of convoluted passageways that led from their living quarters to the great open chamber.
Grandpa?
What?
Can I have a straw?
Why? You're having milk.
I'd still like a straw.
Okay. Better get the chocolate syrup, too.
Go on, Grandpa. I'm listening.
You are? Good. If I do say so myself. Now. Father Mouse, upon reaching the door that I mentioned last week, in the place where the two baseboards don't quite meet, poked his nose out, which meant poking the straw out first, and then he stuck out his head and let his eyes traverse the scene. All was still and quiet. All right, that's enough. Save some for the next week. I'll stir.
No, I can do it.
All right, but I'll hold the glass. Good. There we go. As Father Mouse stepped out of the door, he shifted the straw around between his lips, from pointing straight ahead to up like this. A jaunty angle, the way FDR held his cigarette and holder. FDR refers to...
This?
Yes, just like that. Well, watch out, you're flipping milk. All right, now blot it up. FDR refers to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, U.S. president, before you were born. One of the great ones. Democrat, of course. Yeah. Once Father Mouse had repositioned the strand, then very quickly off he ran, scurrying first along a pew, which afforded him less exposure than crossing on the diagonal would do. Reaching the center aisle, he turned left, ran up the three steps and across the floor, straight to the table. Then, standing at its base and looking up to the candle burning way up top, Father Mouse felt like Sir Hilary must have felt when he stood at the foot of Mount Everest. However, the hem of the table's white tablecloth hung just low enough for Father Mouse to do a standing leap and hook the sheet with his two front feet. Once snagged on with his claws, he behaved like an alpine climber. Vertical ascent. Up, up, and up he went until he reached the table top. Then quickly crossed to the base of the candlestick, made of some kind of hard material, yellow, shiny, and smooth, and impossible to dig your nails into. Still, it had contours and fluting that enabled Father Mouse, with care, balance, and daring, to eventually surmount the pedestal. Last in his path was the candle itself, the tall column of wax. To accomplish this end, he transformed again his claws front and rear, turned them into versions of mountain climbing gear, pitons and cleats. Hugging the column with his arms wide, he began hooching his way up the wax, leaving behind, as he went, two dainty little trails of animal tracks. From his vantage point, looking up so steeply beneath it, Father Mouse could no longer see the flame at all. But as he slowly hitched his way upwards towards the summit, the flame began to appear again above the rim, curiously peering down at him, as though he were some unfamiliar caterpillar crawling up that person's shin. A few more hooches would do, and he would be able to extend his neck and thereby extend the straw to almost touch its tip to the burning wick. But before he could manage this trick, the flame itself eagerly leapt the gap, and now was aglow at the end of his stick. Hooray! Prize won! But the taper on fire meant the fuse was now lit. Now he must hurry back to the lair with it, and the clock was ticking, race commencing. Father Mouse slid down the column of wax, leaving behind, as he did, two parallel lines of ski tracks. Then, with a buttery grip, completely slipped while trying to descend the brass candlestick. He came shooting down out of control, the way a fireman slides down the fire pole when he's off to chase a fire. Arriving like a bumper car, he bounced upon landing. No harm to him, but the effect was to flick ash off the straw, dribbling it across the snow-white tablecloth. Running to the edge of the table, he turned mountaineer again, scratching down the tablecloth, reaching the hemline, dropping off and landing with a soft plop. But sounds are of no consequence now, not considering the fact he's Pony Express and the Olympic torchbearer all in one. A glaring advertisement to any with eyes who happened to be coming by. So surrendering all stealth for speed, he took off like a rocket, aiming diagonally across the floor, plotting the straightest line from here to the mouse house door. This is where the going got tricky. He discovered that running at customary mouse warp speed nearly caused the flame to extinguish. Aghast, Father Mouse reduced it to fast. But even then the flame flared too brightly, and the stick still consumed to ash too quickly as the cone of heat worked its way ever closer to Father Mouse's eyes and nose. Once more with his lips, he tilted the stick up into the jaunty position. A casual observer, surprised by this sight, might have thought he had happened on a flea circus act. Something like FDR in a car going by with its antenna on fire. Something like that. As he approached the door, he pointed the straw forward once more, then entered, scrambling through the twisting crawl space, the heat building up on his face. Then, like a Roman candle on the 4th of July, he burst into the living quarters, dove for the first candle stub he came to, and applied flame to wick, counting deliberately 1, 2, 3, 4. Ouch! He was forced to let go. He watched the burning brand drop to the floor where it cindered to an ash. Well, thankfully, heroically, the deed was done. The critical transfer had taken place. The infant-like flame now clung to the tip of the wick like a tip of a tongue and burned with a tremulous glow. Then gradually, drawing strength from tallow, it grew, altering its hue from pilot light blue to brilliant sun yellow, lighting up the room and lighting up the scene. That would have seemed the oddest thing to a stranger, as if he had just stumbled into the hold of Noah's Ark. The candlelight projected silhouettes upon the walls. Animal shapes. Elephants, lambs, donkeys, and camels. The candle's flickering light created the impression these silhouettes were alive. But none of them were, save the mice. All were carved out of balsa wood, miniature humans included. Three wearing turbans with wise and pious expressions, one bowing, one stooping, one praying, a mother in robes seated, a father kneeling, a babe in a crib, with his arms open and appealing, open and inviting. This moment, however, the mice weren't biting. Their attention was focused on only one thing, to finally see this version of the sunrise. Father Mouse motioned to Grandfather to get behind the candle with him and push. Using their noses, not their shoulders, they rolled the candle stub like a boulder closer to the mother's bedside. Suddenly they heard Mama's sharp breath intake. "Stop the rolling!" Hit the brakes! What's the matter? What is wrong? They asked. One hand was to her throat. She was pointing. Couldn't speak. Oh, my, she said. My child's a... I think I hear your bus.
So what? What is it?
Well, your bus? Well, that's the thing,
Grandpa,
you ride downtown to go to the Y. Find out next week now.
But Grandpa,
hurry up.
Can't you just tell me?
And don't forget your gym bag.
The gym bag! Bye, Grandpa. I love you.
I love you, too.